Hi, I'm Josh, and this coming Halloween, I'm going to cosplay as half Deadpool and half Spawn, and I'm going to be a deadly Spawn.
There you go.
Amazing. That costume idea is totally killer, and if I were someone besides myself, which is Matt, obviously, I too would have a costume idea for this year.
Nerdy.
This is Charlie down in Austin. You know, there's that thing where, like, sometimes your computer, like every goddamn thing, including apps, constantly have to update themselves. But it's just sort of like, I have to have an update. And you're like, why? And it's like, I can't really tell you. Like, is it, what are you specifically just changing? Like, stuff. And then it's like, okay, fine. But sometimes you put it off, or you're like, I don't really feel like flowing with this. This is annoying, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. Or they just say it'll, like, make it kind of hang up a little bit or whatever. And so, like, it's that thing where, so if you have, like, something on a notepad, and then you're just like, it could be important, it could be completely meaningless, and then your computer just goes, I'm going to force restart, and then you're like, do you want to just do these things? And you're like, no one will save you.
Wah, wah.
And Jesus saves, but Moses saves to the cloud so he can get his shit anywhere he goes, and this is Harsha Hot Dog. So first off this week, we have a very lavish short called Laboratory Conditions, or Las Condiciones del Laboratorio, directed by one of the dudes who wrote Aladdin and half of the Disney canon. So fascinating little thing. Stars Minnie Driver and Marissa Tomei hanging out. And
whoever that main dude is in a ton of shit too. Yeah, he's great and stuff.
So this is about a group of scientists who are kind of stealing a dude who's only mostly dead out of the hospital so that they can try and capture the soul as it's leaving the body and get some scientific evidence of the soul. And they get busted by Marissa Tomei, the nurse, who can see, turns out, some things that other people can't. And we learn that souls are real, and assholes who want to capitalize on everything are also real.
Yeah. So this was from Twin Cities. This was one that we looked at, or at least I looked at anyway, a few years ago. But it was because of the length and because of what we're trying to get square, like we can never really kind of get it together. Because this was actually their first go round, if I remember correctly, it was actually longer. This one was 16, yeah, 16 like minutes or thereabouts. If I remember right, I don't remember exactly. I mean, my notes are useless. I actually just checked a little earlier because I was like, I wonder. So this was one that we looked at a few years ago, and just because of the length and everything else, we just couldn't get it to swing. There's a lot to like about this. I thought it was really, really cool. I'm going to sound like the biggest hypocrite ever, but it's sort of like, you know, sometimes we go like, okay, we have to have ambition, you have to have driver or else. But then at a certain point, like, does it get to be too much? And then it should maybe just be like, don't fool with the damn short. Just do so, like, if your aspirations are this large, then like, just make a damn feature out of the thing. Like, it takes. Because this is like, it was almost like overwhelming in its sort of like scope and size. Like, sheesh.
It's just a little tiny movie.
Yeah, I feel like this clips along pretty well. Mm-hmm. To me, rewatching it, the part that I had completely just like, I think, blocked out of my brain. But on the rewatch, I was like, oh, right. That one woman sings a couple times. And it's just in another universe for the rest of this short. Yeah, and it's just the worst.
Sympathy for the Devil.
And she does that, whatever the name of that song, that's the Na 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 Goodbye song, that is just, anyone that sings that at any kind of large public event is just automatically an asshole to me. Because it is just the most, like, if there is a definition of just, like, shit, like, lowest common denominator type art, that's it. Vince McMahon's a big fan of it, if that tells you anything. So it's like, oh, God, that's just like nails on a chalkboard the couple times she does that. Because other than that, everyone is acting like pretty reserved and professional. and just kind of going about their thing. And then, yeah, you get this big exposition dump, but you kind of need it because of the circumstance. It's like, okay, cool way to work that in movie. And then, yeah, it was just, I also just thought it was kind of fun to pull one of these that has like big name celebrities in it. Cause we don't see a lot of that in the Short Game. And it has a little bit of a Lovecraftian horror boogans beyond, you know, the veil of sleep or whatever.
That is a very cool looking thing.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of a, just a neat idea of like, it's not, you know, us getting out. It's what might get in.
But so, even
that was kind of cool.
Yeah, even story-wise, though, it gets that it's not about really the demon or the soul. Like, it's all about the story of that nurse having that moment and going, no, there's nothing in there.
Yeah.
It's just like that decision is such an interesting part of the story that, like, it helps that they have the really cool fleshy thing winking at us, but that decision and that story and that moment is really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it seems as though she's like making a calculation to be like, I'm protecting this sort of sacred, not like in the religious way, but it's like a sacred thing, like a, there's something to be protected there. I guess, I don't know. It's not like that. Where
it's a very Rod Serling idea and a Lovecraft type idea of just like, there are things that in all caps, man is not meant to know or understand. And like, in those that violate into that, you know, meet a bad end or cause a bad end for everybody. Yeah. And like the, I think maybe that final line too is someone else saying, well, let's open it and see what happens.
It's yeah. Like,
yes, let's.
Yeah. I mean, I got the distinct impression she was just feeding that doctor to the demon and hopefully that would stop like the ambition to know what's happening.
Beyond, yeah. And that she would maybe just be like, okay, we'll exchange this shit heel for your continued silence.
Well, it's that thing of like, it's almost that thing in a way of like the, you know, various areas of the wilderness in, you know, all areas of the world and on land and on sea where there are safeguards to protect humans from themselves, certainly. But at a certain point, like, I'm sure a lot more could be done, of course, to protect people from themselves. But at a certain point, like, eh, I mean, you know, give one to the bears or the sharks every once in a while.
Like, it's just, yeah, there's like an old James Randi interview where he's like, yeah, like, as a magician, like, I'm supposed to fool you, but like, I don't want to make people think that like magic is real and they just walk out into traffic thinking they'll be fine. So yeah, I would go save them. And if they still think it's real and go out into traffic, I'd go save them again, but not the third time. The third time it's on them.
That's very generous of him, though, to give them the second one.
Yeah, you get the second one.
I'm like a divine mulligan.
Divine Mulligan.
which is either a do-over or something you have to order off the menu at your favorite bar.
We're all going down to Divine Mulligan's tonight for jalapeno poppers and a drag show.
Well, the real trick is you just order a round of waters and then you just make sure that you know, JC's around.
See, I thought I was going off of Divine and thinking you were going to say John Waters.
Oh, that would have been great too, yeah.
I mean, if I
want to consume anything.
Who am I going to expect you to quote more, John Waters or Jesus Christ?
I do have that. I do have that print upstairs of it's, you know, WWJWD, and it's John Waters like choking up a flamingo. It's like, because I love that man. It's like, he's one of those ones where, like, you know, a lot of the movies are kind of, the movies are sort of, you know, very hit and miss or very, you know, tolerable to very intolerable.
Mostly missed, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, but it's like, you know, the ones that are, there's a certain level of fervor to certain ones that are really great, but I just really love him as a human. Like, I just really admire somebody. Like, he donated, I don't know, I think it must have been in Baltimore, but he donated, like, this, he has a huge art collection of, like, all kinds of different kind of art and outsider stuff and various things. And the condition was that he was going to donate the bulk of his collection to this thing, for this big exhibit. But in order to do that, they had to agree to name the bathroom after him. And it's just like,
Henceforth, this shall be known as a John.
It's just one of those things. Like, he's very much him. And I love the fact that he exists in the world. It makes me happy.
That's good stuff.
Like, should we get into, no one will save you?
Let's.
Yeah, we'll start there for sure.
No one will save you. Nadie va a salvarte. Not happening. Nadia will save you. It's fine.
Yeah, my niece, my youngest niece.
Yeah, you'll be great. Got your back. This is a home invasion movie where the invaders are from outer space. I think it's safe to say, because this is a very single person against alien horde in a way that it doesn't feel like an abduction movie or anything really, but it is just this one person who has no dialogue except for like four words towards the end.
Yeah.
And just up against a completely incalculably alien foe. And it's a fucking gas. Yeah.
It really is. It's one of those ones that, you know, the beginning has some mystery to it because it's this person living a weird little life, kind of, you know, out in the middle of nowhere a little bit and on their own. And it's sort of like, you just kind of watch it like you would, you know, like when you go to one of those butterfly gardens, you're like, oh, look at this. It's kind of nice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and then it just kind of flips a switch and everything just goes to hell at 90 miles an hour for pretty much the rest of the movie. Right.
That setup is so efficient, though, because it, you don't have to have a whole lot of, like, because she can't just go have dialogue with somebody because apparently that's the choice they made. You don't have a 5-minute conversation. Instead, you see, like, mom's tombstone. And later on, like, friend's tombstone and picture of friend. And it's not until the very end that you get the details, but you get enough of the story that you can move forward.
Yeah.
And that gets you to the weird-ass aliens faster.
And you don't have to have the obligatory sci-fi movie sussing out, okay, what do we know about, you know, the aliens or, like, the From Dusk Till Dawn? Well, what do we know about these vampires?
Right.
Like, you know, it's just, there's no her going like, well, should we see if they're allergic to water? Like, she's just, her only real move is run away very fast.
Yeah, she's on her back foot to begin with and never, it is always just kind of barely desperately surviving, it feels like.
Not to imply that I was super distracted necessarily, but I just wanted to interlude real fast that the Diamondbacks have just beat the Dodgers and have swept those motherfuckers out of the playoffs. So I am...
Thank goodness.
You did. Yeah, because fuck the Dodgers.
Right.
Yeah. Artful or otherwise.
Yes.
Not so artful tonight, aren't they?
That's...
I'm sorry to disappoint you with my sports ways, Charlie, but every time I think about sporting events and sporting teams, I just think of the like physical representation of the mascot. So it's like ballpark full of snakes and a ballpark full of dudes trying to dodge the snakes. And honestly, my money would be on the snakes in that scenario.
That's actually a way more interesting idea to me.
What I love the idea that the Diamondbacks, like the mascot would be, like, it's just like, it's just sort of like, you know, mascots usually have like legs. In mm-hmm. this case, it's just like this guy laying on the ground. It's like, this sucks. God damn it.
He can't move and he tries to roll and like, that's not how they do it. Go back.
Like, flop, flop, flop.
You got a wriggle. Like... God damn. That's very silly. I mean, it doesn't work when like the Tennessee Titans are playing like the South St. Louis Blue Jays. You're like, nah, that seemed like,
well, it's like, excited. I think I might have sent you guys the headline a while back. The one that was like, if outside of the sports component of it, this would be an amazing headline, which was like, you know, so-and-so clears waivers and is now officially a Dolphin.
Yeah.
it's like taking the sports part out of it. It's just incredible that he is now officially a Dolphin.
That reminds me of being disappointed learning that Hootie and the Blowfish were talking about the team, the Dolphins. Because I liked it just being a random admission of his that Dolphins just make him cry. Like, they're so adorable. You know.
It's oh, it's Kristen a song Bell about a football?
Lot. Yeah, I'm such a baby, oh. You're the Dolphins make me cry. Oh. Yeah.
I learned that now.
Pleased to be of service and for making you think of Hootie and the Blowfish for the first time in 20 years.
Also true. Actually, no, I thought of them recently because didn't like Darius Rucker get into like the Country Music Hall of Fame or something?
Yeah.
I remember seeing some headline about that and being like, oh, that guy's still around.
Well, good on you, Hootie.
Must be doing well. That's good. That's nice when people make a living.
The last thing on this little divergent is that I will always remember, because I've always been a fan of them. I really like them. I was so glad to come and I got to see them play in Colorado. But, you know, Big Head Todd, the Monsters. And I'll always think of David Letterman, like when they were guests on David Letterman 10,000 years ago. And he's just sort of like, I don't know how we got him in the studio. His head is huge. It's just gigantic. And he runs that joke like 5 times. He's just like, you'll see his gigantic head. It's like over and over and over again in a very Dave Letterman sort of way. It's
Letterman,
sort of like,
yeah, he would latch on to a word or a phrase he liked the sound of, like a terrier with a slipper.
Yeah, it's just sort of like, and you knew it tickled him. It was just one of those things. I'll always remember that bit that he just kept doing over and over and over again about how, you know, the lead singer of Big Hit Tell the Monster's head was gigantic.
But anyway. I think that's me too. I like a funny to not funny to funny again.
Yeah,
just keep digging.
I depend on it. Aliens.
Yeah. These aliens are neat too, because we have, it's like they have different castes or classes.
Like, I mean, bees. They kind of progress like a video game almost. She meets like a gray, and then just they get progressively harder as she levels up.
And you see like the guy with the very short legs and the very long arms, who seems like a baby, maybe. But then it's like, now this may be like the, you know, like an ant colony where you have the warrior ants are enormous and the drone ants have big forceps and biceps and shit. You know what I mean? Like, the one that signals the ships to land has giant arms, and he can make these really elaborate shapes with them while he's signaling.
He's doing
the
like
ship.
semaphore stuff, which is kind of cool, actually.
But a lot of the stuff that the aliens do is just completely incomprehensible, and I really like that because they don't act remotely human. You can't really gauge what they want or what they're doing or what's going on behind those eyes. And I think that's really neat. And the things that they do aren't immediately recognizable.
That was a very interesting choice, because like, it is not a subtle choice by any stretch of imagination. Like, it is very, and I'm not going to say distracting, because I don't think it was distracting, but it was like, it certainly was like, it's not like they're trying to world build like a sci-fi thing where it just never ends and they have to explain every little bit of it. But it was definitely ever present in the way that you're watching them interact with her and the way that you're watching them interact with each other and kind of like what their plan is. You know, and so like, there's kind of like, it is a big part of kind of what we're dealing with as the viewer to kind of like suss out like what we're trying to do. And I like that they didn't, you know, again go into some big explanation. There's not a neighbor who also survived, and they're like surmising what to, none of that kind of stuff. Like, it's just you, the viewer, just kind of like watching a foreign movie with no subtitles, kind of like trying to piece it together as far as like what these things are, what they're doing. And the thing that I found very interesting was that they are extremely powerful, but also one of those, they're extremely powerful, but like they have to be paying attention. Like, if they have to, you know, notice something. And so like the first guy gets, you know, kind of jammed in the head, and then, you know, like the second one gets skewered through or whatever else. But it also shows that at any given point, if it's looking at you, you're like, I'm gonna pick up a weapon. It's like, the fuck you are. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, and so it's very, very powerful in a very otherworldly kind of way. But just like any other kind of living creature, there are some limitations, you know, kind of a, you know, like a crocodile is very, very dangerous in a swamp. But if you're like in a treehouse, it's sort of like a crocodile is not going to be able to do much to you. And so it's sort of like it kind of plays around, again, without explanation, but it does play around with those, the ideas of like how a living creature like operates and doesn't operate and what its limitations are without ever like explaining. Like, it's not spoken. None of these things are spoken.
I think if you have a movie with more like studio interference, you'd have the tinfoil hat neighbor.
Oh, for sure.
Be like, he said aliens been around for years, but don't listen to old Jeb. And it's like, oh, thankfully they don't do that. And like,
or she would just be talking to herself the whole time.
Yeah, sure. We would have gotten like Star Trek posters all over her bedroom or something, and then she'd be like, I've been preparing my whole life to do this. But they give her like the difference in sort of how like she subverts the aliens' attempts to get her is like, it kind of makes me think of like I forget which one you said this, something about like the difference between, you know, there's different power levels, like dynamics kind of at work here. And it's sort of like, if you just let a mouse loose in the room with me, I am way bigger and stronger and scarier to the mouse. And yet if you just made me try to catch it, I'd be very bad at that.
Right.
Like, cause I'm too big and lumbering and powerful, you know? And that seems to be the thing that keeps her alive, is that she's simply squirrely. Just kind of like slides through a thing and jumps out a window and hops through a car and, you know, just kind of wriggles around, like, you know, when you get a fish in the boat and it gets off the line.
Like, she's also kind of beneath their notice almost.
Yeah, they seem,
until they take an interest.
Yeah, and I was trying to figure out, and again, because they don't explain all this, like, what, how different does this play out if she doesn't kill one?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But it seems like they were there to throat fuck the entire population anyway, so...
But to, like, make them then live as sort of, like, automatons?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of? So it's like, would she just be yet another, like, pod person on a planet entirely of pod people? And so, like, sure, like, bad to end up that way, but, like, you know, like, that would have been one thing had she not gotten the, you're cool, you can hang from the aliens at the end. Like, oh, we see that the trauma we inflicted upon you was nothing compared to the trauma you've already suffered. So,
I was full of
trauma you have suffered.
Yeah, tell me about that, yeah, Charlie, because I had differing thoughts on that ending.
Yeah, so that's like the one area, you know, I don't want to be the person in the room who's always like, everybody's like, I like a thing, and then they're like, meh, contrarian. Like, I thought this was rad. I really liked this a lot. The ending, however, like the last 10-15 minutes of this, I was really straining, because it was like, you know, and I think, and Brian Duffield is the guy who did this. He's the guy who did fucking Spontaneous, which rules. Mm-hmm. And he did Love, he wrote Love and Monsters, which I really dug. He wrote Underwater amazingly. He's got a hard charging brain for creative thinking. He's a really creative kind of fellow. And I just, the ending really kind of felt as though it was like, it's like we've come to the precipice, and it's sort of like, and then it just sort of like, it's like, then the air just sort of goes, and I don't know if it was supposed to be like shocking or like, holy shit kind of thing, where she's like going about her normal life and she's happier and everybody's like, hey, you know, whatever, but they're all being controlled by these things. Like, oh, well, there's, her life is better now that, like, it's not, they're human, sort of, but whatever. But it's like, I don't know if either he was thinking that it was going to be more evocative or shocking or something, but I kind of was like, and not to the, like, wah, wah, but it was like, I kind of was like, especially given the exposure that we get to, like, you know, them, like, reading into her thoughts and kind of, like, seeing this thing, this kind of unintended thing that happens and then whatever, and it's sort of like, and they're just kind of studying it and they're trying to figure it out, and then they're like, and yeah, you say, like, you know, like, oh, you've already gone through enough shit already, like, we'll drop you in there, you're not really, like, you've proven to be formidable, but we figure you know what our powers are, so go on about your life, citizen, like, kind of vibe about it. And it's like, okay, well, that's all right. And I expected there to be another 10 minutes after that. It was like, you know, just something, and it just kind of stopped, and I was a little bit bummed out by that.
Well, it's a weirdly dark ending. Like, for all the smiles and butterflies at the end there, it's like they decided to kind of let her remain sentient on a planet full of drones, and instead of that being like a hellish sentence, she's like thrilled, which shows you like how fucked she is. To think that, like, yep, this is cool. Like, until the day I die, I'm happy to just live out a life with zero human interaction, despite having human-shaped things moving around me. And, like, that's a pretty dim view on humanity. Like, that's kind of interesting.
That idea that's the best option she has, given that, like, her whole town hates her, and her life has been destroyed for quite some time now. Like, I did kind of dig them setting it up that way. It reminded me a little bit of The Witch, because it's like the point for her is that this is actually the best option she has, you know? And like, I would have been okay if they had just like looked at all of her videos and then just like, yeah, fuck it. Here's your throat creature. You know, whatever. You'll be happier. But I wasn't expecting this. And I've seen the failing to save the Earth from the aliens, and I've seen the fleeing from the aliens, and I haven't seen anything quite like that before. So I thought that was cool. It took some calibrating. Like, when it was over, Jess and I just kind of like, Okay. Did we like it? And we're like, yeah. But it took a minute. You know,
it almost seems as though, like, you know, maybe they're doing like a speed read on most people. And then they're like, and then her was like, whoa. That's something to be gained here. Like, it seemed like almost like a, like there's like a, there's like a, there's a scientific merit to like keeping this one kind of like, we don't need the shell. We got another one on the sides. We're good. And then like, let's just leave this one because there's something kind of useful happening there. Maybe that's kind of the deal. I just expected another 10 minutes and then it was like credit started. It's like,
I just kind of assumed like if they're doing the most, you know, plausible reason that I've heard for like going to another planet, which would be to gather resources, and the way to make that easier and not have to destroy the planet would be to take over the planet without having to destroy it all with like weapons and war and all that. If you leave one human unchanged, that's not going to affect your ability to do all those things. So I feel like they could just be like, yeah, this is close enough. And honestly, she wouldn't even be trying to undo what we're doing because she doesn't want to be around people. This one can just go about her business and we'll go about doing whatever it is we came for. And it just that, you know, that one ant isn't going to eat your whole.
You don't think they kind of set her up, though, in that new life? Because it kind of felt like the aliens had given her like, yes, all these people are going to love you now.
Yeah, I assume she's like a gerbil, right? You give them a little habit trail.
Well, that was kind of the thing that I was thinking, like, in upon reflection, I was like, I wonder if there's other people that they did this with where they were like, they just sort of, you know, they just kind of go like, ah, well, there's nothing to be gained here necessarily, and whatever. But then it's also like, I think back on what she dealt with, what she went through, and it was like, it's like, yes, she killed the friend. She didn't jump on top of the friend and then beat her head into a pulp. She didn't, you know, it wasn't like, it was, as close as you can come to the word accident, it was basically an accident. But how small towns are and how people are, it's sort of like even things that are accidental. Like, you know, I think on a much more serious note, like, you know, Josh, I don't know, you remember Craig Steinbrink from back home. And so like, and when the accident happened with the truck where, like, you know, his older brother kind of got, you know, he was in the back of a pickup truck, hit a bump, fell out a dirt road, but in the dirt road was a rock, and his head hit the rock, and then he died. And it was like, nobody intended, they weren't hot-dogging, nobody was drunk, it was just sort of like, it was like this stick shit accident. Should they have been in the back of a pickup truck? Like, no. Should they, you know, whatever else? No. But it was sort of like, ultimately, it was just like kind of this.
900 people could do it and be fine.
Yeah, it could happen. The one fucking time. And so like in that scenario, she was in the, so, you know, like I said, I don't mean to make light, but it's like, when we get the scene of that, pardon me, when we get the scene of that in the movie, it's sort of like, you know, there's like this roughhousing, a little bit of bullying going on, a little bit of, you know, kind of kids working out their boundaries or whatever else. And the girl gets, you know, gets upset and gets kind of embarrassed and gets kind of knocked to the ground or whatever else. And it's sort of like in the kind of moment of being like, ah, whatever. And it's like the absolute worst thing happens. And it's just sort of like, so she didn't intend to probably even harm, let alone kill her friend. But that's sort of what happens. So it's like as close as you get to a kind of accident. But then you kind of just go like those reverberations, like that scene where she goes to the sheriff's office and the, you know, the girl's mom like spits in her face or whatever else. Like, it supremely pissed me off. it was just sort of like, but I mean, good job, movie. That's fine. But I sort of like, but it made me think just a lot of times these type of things really make me think of growing up in Prescott, where sort of like, it's like sometimes it's insular small town bullshit, which is sort of like, sort of enough churches and enough racism, and you really kind of get this boiler pot of crap. And it's sort of like, and so this idea that she's like on this family farm, the farmhouse, like kind of ostracized from society because of a goddamn accident, just feels very authentically small town. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of like it's the same reason why, you know, like the West Memphis Three, they wore dark clothing and listened to satanic music, so therefore they must have killed those children. So sort of like, yeah, I don't think that they have that same thought if it's in Chicago. Sort of like, and so, yeah, so this does feel like a little bit of a treatise on, like, you know, the kind of insular nature of small towns, where, you know, where again, I just kind of go like, I wonder what this looks like if they move the camera out a little ways, you know, yeah, like the end of The Invitation, where you look out the porch and you see the red lights kind of coming up on the hill. You're like, oh, damn. Like in this scenario, like could the next town over where they pick their person, or like, is there a couple people, or, you know, whatever. All that being said, like, you know, I got to give Duffy a lot of credit. Like the action sequences of this are suspenseful and like tense, and, you know, especially given once you get a sense of these guys' powers, you're like, jeez, like there's no escaping this shit, man. Like this is not good. And so they really do a good job of like of the way it's shot with edited. Like it's excellent when it comes to like the action kind of clips, because bam, 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 bam. And hats off to the young lady too in this one too, because she really carries. She's it. You know, just kind of carries it.
Yeah, there were only a few little moments where I went, no, she would have said something. But for the most part, that worked. Like, having her be the town pariah made sense, that nobody would really want to talk to her if they encountered her on the road. It was just awkward at the police station. I felt like they should have had at least her going, no, listen, instead of just, like, failing, like, her courage failing her. You know?
Yeah.
But I was surprised, because we've watched shorts that have that conceit for some reason of no dialogue, and 5 minutes in, it's driving me nuts. And this one, like, there was very rarely when I was, like, keenly aware that she wasn't talking and probably should be.
Yeah, it's pretty much just the police station, I think, for me, where it was. I mean, aside from the idea that most people will, you know, mutter something to themselves here and there,
especially when they get hurt, like,
yeah,
to me, like, getting hurt and not yelling fuck is just such a weird idea.
It's, yeah, that's weird, but I also go, that's, you know, that is probably not 100% of people. So,
but like, when she goes to the car and she can't get to the start, it's just sort of like, you know, just like, it's like, god damn it.
And not bitch. Like, yeah, not like a oh shit or come on or a please or whatever. Like, yeah, but at the same time, like, it seems, because I like this, it seems silly to get to balk at that and be fine with aliens. So,
yeah.
You know. And the same thing goes for, like, the aliens don't always look great. There are scenes where they look fucking fantastic. And then there's a couple scenes where you kind of go, but I just decided upon the movie kind of kicking into gear, I'm just going to watch this on its own terms and not nitpick the effects.
Yeah, I kind of was. I'm glad you said that, because I kind of had the same thing too, where there's certain sequences where they just look truly incredible, and there are a couple bits where you're sure, like, they
don't look. They ran out of money or time or both in a couple spots.
Well, and there's only so, yeah, I mean, in terms of bandwidth, I mean, there's only so much you can do. It's just sort of like, and so ultimately, like, you know, but I was in the same. I'm really glad you said it that way, because that's exactly what I did. I don't care.
It was too much fun to start. Yeah, it was way too much fun to be picky about that, which is, again, just a good sign overall.
I mean, you have to admire the brass cojones to go, like, what are we going to do for our, you know, modest, low-budget film? Like, well, we're going to shoot it almost entirely at night. And with a single actor who's in every scene. And we're going to use mostly a single location, which will be absolutely destroyed throughout.
And use completely non-existent bad guys.
Yeah.
Like, astonishing.
Well, that must have been, I mean, you want to talk about, like, just from a production standpoint, like, it's sort of what that what all that must have looked like in terms of how to, because at no point do you get that Sharknado thing where it's sort of like, you know, Ian Ziering is kind of looking at about 23 degrees and it's like, well, I mean, somewhere in the general vicinity is a flying shark, but like, he's just kind of looking off, you know, to the horizon, you know, kind of thing. And it's sort of like, okay, well, whatever. This one, I don't think at any point, even once, does her focus not exactly where it's supposed to be, or even the lighting or the nothing. Like, they seem to be just fucking airtight when it came to like just keeping those edges tucked in. And I can't imagine that was an easy feat. I think that was probably pretty damn difficult.
Difficult feats.
But yeah, I mean, it's the overall, like, you know, really solid. I kind of get to the end, the last 15 minutes or so with like the doppelganger version of her and the kind of the her on the table thing and them kind of like, man, what do you want to do? Well, actually, I don't know. She seems, I don't know. I
kind of want to give her a lollipop, Tom.
Yeah, it's like, geez, man. Like, she made those little, feel really bad. Like, I really shouldn't have flipped the table over all her little miniatures because, like, those were really cool. And it's like, yeah, it kind of felt the same way. And it's like, yeah, and plus we got a break coming up soon. So, like, it just kind of, and then, so, like, basically for the doppelganger through that ending bit, I just kind of was like, it felt like there was, like, multiple ideas that are going on that were well formed and insightful and creative. But it just kind of, it felt a little bit like, a little bit kind of too much happening all at once to kind of like feel like it wasn't, it just needed a little more space to breathe. You know, kind of, not unlike, even though I really liked it, not unlike Annihilation a little bit, where like the last 15 minutes of Annihilation just kind of have that same kind of vibe of being like, what with the who? And it's just like, just you gotta go with it. Like, all right. And you just kind of just go at their whatever pace they're gonna give you. And that's perfectly fine because it's, you know, ultimately it's like, does it really hinge on that one or some big what a twist, TM? Not really. So it's like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's not a big deal.
Nice. Yeah, so for this one, like, I was pretty stoked with it and I had a damn good time with it. So I would give, like, especially given the difficulty of how that must have been to shoot, so I would give it like a 8.5 out of 10. Big circular concentric oval spaceships that look like blue versions of the WB logo.
Michigan J Frog comes popping out of there.
Oh no, you've ruined the movie in my head now.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, I'm going to enjoy watching it in my head anyway, but so yeah, I'll go just a titch higher and I'll go the full 9 on that. Cause just, for being a little bit of what could have been nothing that I didn't really know anything about, I just simply clicked on it to watch because, like, oh, here's a thing. And I should start watching random horror movies, not just stuff we do for the show. And, you know, 20 minutes in, I was having the time of my life. And I was like, fuck yeah. Like, I pick well. I'm smart. And then, of course, the next thing I watched was terrible. But this was just a hoot and a half. And, yeah, just, it's nice when the viewing experience lets you have something to kind of chew on and think about afterwards, sort of like the, well, what do we think happens in the end there, or why were they there? Mm-hmm. And even afterwards, in like the harsh light of day, the little fiddly bits, like some of the CGI and stuff like that, didn't bother me. And that's a rare bird indeed. So yeah, 9 out of 10. Michigan J Frogs.
Ragtime gals.
Well, sometimes we have that feeling with Joe, where we'll be like, she'll say all kinds of stuff, whatever else, and then she'll turn the video on her phone and be like, well, what did you say with this and that, whatever else, and she just kind of goes, and sort of grins, yeah. Like, damn it,
thank twice you. On Sunday,
just sort of like a ribbit, I'm like, damn it. Yeah, I mean, it feels weird being the low man on the totem pole, but I mean, like, I still really thought this was solid and very, very well made. And hats off to the young lady, the lead of this. She's really solid. Caitlin Deaver is the lady.
She's not in a ton of other stuff because I looked her up immediately.
Yeah, she was in Booksmart, which I'm trying to think. There's something else that she was in, but anyway, like, yeah, hats off to her. Like, really solid as can be. But I think this kind of gets into that kind of like sci-fi horror area where like Quiet Place kind of would exist in this realm, where it's sort of like just different interesting kind of ways of interpreting kind of sci-fi stuff. And I also just really like somebody who has the, as Josh says, the kind of the cojones to kind of like be like, we're not going to do a lot of explaining. We're not going to have any like subtitles with aliens talking. We're not going to have like the alien ship with a USB port that you can just upload a virus into. We're not going to do that kind of stuff. And some of this stuff is going to seem really foreign and weird and like nonsensical almost. But like, it's not done for spectacle. It's just sort of like, you just kind of have to take at face value that you're not going to understand some of that. And like, through that whole middle chunk of the movie, it was just like a, you know, huge kudos to that, because I don't think that that's an easy choice to make. That being said, I just think that the last bit just felt a little like both over and undercooked at the same time. So I just, even though I really did like it overall, so I would say 8 out of 10, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hands with my long arms.
Out of 10. Man, you would get some really crazy calisthenics out of that guy. He just needs to do some jumping jacks. Anyway, let's take a quick break.
His big old fingers just to jump jacks.
He could be his own jump rope.
I'm my own jump rope.
I'm going to take a quick break, and the rest of you guys are welcome to do that too.
Yes.
And we'll be right back. So up next we have Deadly Spawn, or Engendro Mortal. And this is a movie that you can pretty much get the gist of from the trailer. I mean, you could pretty much get the gist of it from the poster. And there are giant tentacle aliens and little tiny spermy aliens and little mill-sized aliens, and they're just going to chew their way through some dudes, and that's pretty much what you're in for.
Yep. I forgot to look it up and see where this falls on the Critters/Tremors timeline.
So this came out in 83. Tremors was 1990. Tremors was 1990, and then the Critters, I think, was 80, somewhere between...
I want to say like
84. 85, 86, somewhere in that ballpark, I think. This was,
that's the important thing, because
Gremlins would have been, what, 87, 84. 84. Oh, wow.
84. Oh, that's earlier than I thought.
The same year as Ghostbusters, son of a bitch.
Yeah, 1984 was a motherfucker of a weird, strong year for movies. Even, you know, and because I was 7, all of them are amazing movies. at first I thought this movie was just going to be a series of vignettes where we met people for like 5 minutes and then they got killed by aliens. And reader, I was on board for that movie. I think that would have been great. It was just like a tight 85 and it's just like 8 scenes of different unrelated people just getting their asses handed to them by these weird, you know, Audrey 2/Dongs. But instead, you get 2 of those, and then, there's some people, and they just hang out and chat, and oh god, do they chat for a long time. And then, like, little boy almost gets killed by aliens, and he goes down and sees the giant alien, and just stands the fuck there for like a third of the movie, staring at this thing. And then, like, you get the spermies aliens, which is great, and they just kind of, the dumb kid blows up the big alien, and you're like, cool, well done movie. And then it just keeps going for like 10 more minutes. Like, what are you're done, like, we're done here, what are you doing? But no, it just continues to go. So like, ultimately, this could have been like, I think if you're watching it now, like, watch the highlight reel more than anything, because there is some flab in between the killing scenes that we so much enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't feel as much of the weight with the kind of the talky 70s characters kind of a thing. Like, it's, you know, and I kept thinking too, is like, yeah, I love Arachnophobia, but I was like, you know, there are definitely some gags in Arachnophobia that are from this movie. And it's sort of like, and I love Arachnophobia, and it's like, but, you know, there just certainly are a couple things in this, whereas I was watching this, I'm like, that feels very much like the bit from, like, the thing where the old lady's in the kitchen with the salad and, like, the little guy's like, nah, 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 and the, then the kind of garbage disposal thing and that whole bit and, like, stuff like that. Like, in the little parlor with the lamp and the butter, like, all that shit's from Arachnophobia. It's like, that just happened to come out 7 years later. And so it's sort of like, it does feel like, I don't know, it's a weird, I hate them to call it, like, good. Because it's like, it's not necessarily like one of those ones where you watch, like, it's not like watching like Hidden where you're like, how, or like Dead Heat where you're like, how did this exist? How did I never know about this? My God, this is amazing. I'm having so much fun. It's not necessarily that, but it's also like, it does feel like it's a step beyond the 70s kind of like blend fest thing. And it's not necessarily that. And it's not necessarily into the really deep into the 80s where you're like, you're also going to have like three different like, you know, bland sort of weird sex scenes and hot tubs and stuff and the sort of like, or just sort of like, you know, like a lot of extra racism and like it's not like we're not into that area. It's
just like movie by just only having white people.
But I see what you mean, because you do get like, it's not of the same ilk as like all the Gremlins cash-ins that came directly after, you know, like your Ghoulies and Creepies and Slimies and Drulies and Julies, which was a bunch of girls named Julie. It was pretty boring. But it's, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have that feeling of being like a cash in on something else. It's just like somebody had this as their deeply personal, weird ass vision. And they.
Well, that's kind of the way that, that's perfectly large. Said, Joshua. That's perfectly said. That's exactly how I kind of take that as like, it just is absolutely like, I have this thing of like this idea of, you know, you have E.T. and you have Close Encounters. You have all these things that are kind of almost cocoon. Where they're like hopeful and they're kind of like positive in nature or whatever else. And sort of like, I do like the idea of just sort of like, you know, thing crash lands. Like, they're just little toothy monsters. It's just like
tearing bitches in there everywhere, and they just get everywhere. Has
a lot more in common with like the Blob remake than it does.
It's a lot meaner. Like, there's not like a you're not so different, you and I kind of feel to this. Like, this is not that. And I feel like the dude, and I don't know really much about the guy who wrote and directed this. I don't really know a ton about him, but it was sort of like it is one of those things. I just kind of go like, this does feel like a singular kind of vision, where instead of it being like a happy-go-lucky kind of, it's a small universe kind of vibe about alien stuff. It's more just sort of like a, or they could just be fuckers, and it's sort of like, and it's just awful and just relentless, and there's no reasoning with them, and there's no whatever. It's just kind of like, just try to survive pretty much, and I really can appreciate that for sure. You know, and also it does seem like, too, like, I think in the kids' room, there's, like, all the kids, like, really big into monsters and stuff. And there's, like, the Tales from the Crypt poster, and there's, like, some really obscure sci-fi from, like, the 50s ones. Like, usually you get, like, the ones that are still and stuff like that. Like, that's usually what you get. And, you know, whatever. But this was, like, a lot more obscure shit. So I just kind of feel like this dude was maybe just, like, in some ways, was sort of like that kid. Like, he's just sort of like, that's him, you know, in a way. And, so yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's not the Citizen Kane of monster movies, but it certainly was one of those things where it's like, what an odd little thing this is.
It does borrow from Alien. The first Alien would have been out at that point, and the idea of all the multiple life stages, is definitely Alien. But in that budget, with that amount of try, it's really fun how they come across. They get to design these little creatures, and then they have them go nyam.
The big one by way of Leviathan. Yeah,
it's
the big one is so great.
The big one is such a treat. Just like how big you want the boss alien to be there? Well, you know, huge, man. Okay, seven. So like a one arm puppet? No, man, like huge. Like a two arm puppet? No, you're not thinking big enough.
Like, we're gonna have it on a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
And five armed Steve is gonna be one of them.
Right. You saw that Jabba puppet they haven't built yet. Make it like that.
Well, and the best thing about it really is, like, you know, the fact that thing can't, I mean, biologically speaking, like, it can't actually close its mouth. Mm-hmm. Like it's,
I love it when monsters do that, because yeah, I always wonder about that. It's like, do you just drool forever? Is your throat really sore all the time? What happens? Are your sinuses dry?
Well, it's just like you know, some door to door like floss salesman's gonna open the door to the Lost Carnage, look at that monster, and go like, I can retire. Like this is great, but it's one of those things that like that, that to me is dumb as it is. Yeah, old Gil's on the right track again. But like what I really love about it really is that like it's, you know, there's so much improbableness to where like, you know, they're really in a single location. They're just really in, I mean, yeah, there's a scene in the old lady's house with them just get the little spermy guys stuck on everybody and all the deal. But the main thing is with the house with the
aunt and uncle visiting and the teen.
Yeah, that house is kind of where everything sort of is, and that's kind of where most of things happen, and then also too the level of viciousness to it, where it's sort of like a love interest, where else like no, she gets her head bitten off. I don't know. It's one of those things. Like I said, I'm just not gonna jump to the rooftops and be like, how to scream about how this is just this misunderstood masterpiece. But it's just, I do really appreciate the abject chutzpah and just absurdity that is this like singular thing that like, it's just like this kind of like, it is sort of home invasion-y to some degree, but it also kind of like does a little bit of the thumbing nose to like that kind of like, well, we can be friends with the aliens. Like, who the fuck says? Like, for many years now, especially recently with this whole, some of this alien stuff that's come up recently, all this kind of nonsense, and it's always humanoid. They always have this idea of this humanoid thing, and I always just go like, what happens if it's like a mist? What happens if it's like this little spore thing? Like, what happens if it's just made of extremely sharp metal bits, and it just rolls around like cutting into stuff? Like, what if it's like Splinter, for fuck's sake? It's just sort of like this idea that it's humanoid. It's just like, let's do something else with it. It's one of the reasons why I loved Arrival so damn much. It's just sort of like, it's just so creative and interesting. And so, like, I am not going to compare this to Arrival, but I do really appreciate it.
Very deeply cerebral, and the other one stars Amy Adams.
All right. Wise guy.
No, another Arrival. I mean, get out.
Yes. Yeah, it's sort of like,
The having watched a hell of a lot of Charles Band lately, for something that probably had a similar budget and shooting schedule and everything to many of those movies, the thing that made me, I think, really enjoy this was at no point does it feel lazy. Like, I feel like they are people that had an idea and went for it and are kind of excited about it, and their missteps are those probably of budget naivete. But at the same time, they do some things that, like, that's a lot of weird monsters to create. And, like, you know, and then you have an ending where you just have one devour the entire fucking house.
Yeah. Well, there's an energy. And that's another thing. That's another thing, too.
Shot, man.
Oh, it's so good. It's
glorious. And then also, too, like, there is an energy to this where, like, to your point, Joshua, like, there's a lot of stuff from, like, the mid-late 70s through the mid-80s that, like, is very... You know, when we were younger, you hear like, oh, they go, if you get the VHS tape of this thing, and it's this thing, and blah, 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 blah. And you watch it, and it's just fucking morons, like, yelling at each other, and then there's a couple pairs of boobs, and then, like, some paint thrown around, and you're like, oh, that was it? And it's sort of like, but there's the lore of it. Whereas, like, something like this, like, it does feel like it's got an energy. There's more of an energy, I think, to something like this, where I can really sort of get into and having fun with it, you know, where it doesn't feel like 10,000 slashers from that period of time where you're just like, God, just fucking end. Like, all the box art is so great, and then the movies are just awful in every capacity. Right. Now, this doesn't feel like that kind of a thing, and I wish I knew more about this dude. I just don't really know anything about him.
Yeah, so then, like, that's fun. I think it was, like, probably a 5.5 out of 10 with a thumbs up. You know, that kind of like, it's not good, but it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, to be realistic, this is certainly not, you know, going to win any major awards or anything like that. But especially for an older movie of an era that at this point is sort of getting done to death in homages. This is kind of a forgotten segment of that earlier era of just bizarre, wacky ass shit that got made that wasn't Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street. So I had a good time with this. I'd say I enjoyed it a little more. So I'm going to give it I'll go 6.5 out of 10. Just once. I want to be able to like work a puppet like that in a movie for somebody. Just one, you know, whoever's out there listening, if you need a puppeteer for a minute, I got your back.
Well, and that's the glorious thing, right? Is I just, you know, you watch that thing move, like when it, so like, I should say too, that this is on Shudder, but Synapse put this out, 10 years ago, maybe longer, probably longer. And I remember getting the disc of this, or, well, and I have it now, but I got the disc of this, when Vulcan was still a thing. And like remastering is maybe an overstatement, but like it's, they do clean it up. And so like that creature just, especially the big guy, just pops. Like it's the color of it. Like they've really, there is actually some legit depth to the, like they really put all their eggs in that basket, and it really looks rad as shit, like in a remaster kind of way. Much like with Phantasm, when you're like, when they put out the remaster, you're like, oh, you can see things now.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look at that. Yeah. You know, but yeah, that being said, it's sort of like, you know, I enjoy the spirit of what they're going after for this whole thing. And like I said, it's just certainly not dull in that kind of bad way that so many 80s things can be. And so, yes, I'm right up. I'm with Matt on that one. I'm going to say 6.5 out of 10, 6.5 out of 10. Humpha, 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 humpha. Because that's the sound I kept making when I was watching. Yeah. Even though it goes, I was like, no, you go humpha, humpha, humpha. Humpha, humpha.
Yeah.
Or you go, come on, Seymour, don't be a
not far off.
Yeah. Let's finish up then with Totally Killer or Totalmente Asesino, I suppose. So when I first heard about this movie, the like girl is going to be sent back in time to stop a slasher, I immediately thought of the Final Girls.
Me too.
And fortunately, this is going a completely different direction, I think, more than being about like 80s slasher horror. It is more the like, it's more Back to the Future-y than like a trying to get back.
It plays a lot more fish out of water.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, you know, and like a kind of a Hardy Boys, you know, mystery type
or
thing,
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
It's a little, well, little gory for Scooby-Doo, but yeah.
Well, and then I remember seeing this when they first put the trailer out for this. I was like, okay, well, this really feels like why, like they made Final Girls, and Final Girls is awesome. Why do that again? I don't really, like, maybe I'm missing something. And so it's like, okay, I'm not sure about this. But it was sort of like, it's like, okay, well, maybe not. And then watching through, so it's a bummer because, so I, when I got the plague, I missed the end of Fantastic Fest because I was just wiped out and, like, I couldn't, you know, I can't go be around two people and so on. So it was a bummer. And so this was a closing night movie for Fantastic Fest. And I was like, so it's like, okay, the original trailer, I was like, well, I don't know, like this Final Girls. And then it was like, but then this is a closing night movie. And like, that's interesting. So I was like, well, okay. And so then watching through, so I watched this basically twice because I watched, Kristen was up for part of this and she got really tired. And so I just basically were around pretty much to about 10 minutes into the movie to rewatch it with her. So I kind of more or less watched this twice. And it was sort of like, and even the second time through, and then picked up even more smarts when it came to the writing. Like, there's just a lot of very smart writing in this that I was like, I would not have expected at all by any stretch. I think they did really create something quite unique, and it wasn't an also-ran of Final Girls. They really kind of had a much more original and interesting idea. And it was really cool. It was really a lot of fun. I really had a lot of fun with it.
I really like the applying that fish out of water thing that, you know, think of the sequence in Back to the Future where he tries to order a Pepsi and Diet Pepsi and a Pepsi Free, and it's just that fish out of water thing, but then it uses it to show like how the 80s kind of sucked, and for those of us who were there, like, we remember that it kind of sucked. Adults didn't give a shit about you. The idea that you should be like listened to, or your opinions mattered, or anything you said was important. There for adults. They're just like totally detached and oblivious, you know, not talking about your feelings, being, you know, like needlessly mean as a way of enforcing conformity. Like, all of this rang so true.
And that was something I was going to check with you guys about, because normally in like nostalgia movies, there's a bit of like, okay, that's like exaggerated for silliness. All this felt like shit that I've seen. Like, yeah. All the 80s stuff, I was like, well, yeah, that was entirely my experience. Like, I didn't, and it is just kind of outrageous enough, I thought, on its own, that I was like, I don't know that they juiced this much.
Yeah.
This feels pretty legit.
And just like, little things like the gym coach yelling, and how far off guard that throws her, and how, yeah, like that, I guess they wouldn't do that now. But
or the guy that eventually is what, the principal or something like that, when he's the jock and like throws her out of the party and just belches at her. Like, I knew guys that did that. Like,
and just all of the dudes constantly expressing no emotion but horny.
Yeah, and then like the gay panic of like, oh, you want to have a lesbian weekend or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, that's so how everything was. Like, I just was really impressed with all the stuff that she's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, no, this is the kind of shit that I have to mentally override.
And also too, like, you know, give the casting directors and give the actors a lot of credit, because like the young lady who plays the teen version of Julie Bowen is excellent, and then the kid playing Lachlan Monroe as a teenager, like, I don't know, I've seen Lachlan Monroe in a lot of movies, and like one of my favorites, of course, of all time being Dead Man on Campus, and like Lachlan Monroe is like, you know, he certainly does, you know, a lot of the silly stuff and Scary Movie and then all that kind of jazz, but like he as a human has certain mannerisms that he just sort of does. Like there's a way that he does this thing where he fixes an expression and turns his head, and like it is a way that he just sort of operates his body. And that kid playing him as a teenager did that, and like, you know, obviously paying attention, and it was like a little thing that I was like, oh fuck yes, I love little shit like that. And so like, so I just, the little things like that make me think that they were just, there's just a whole lot more try that they were kind of putting into what they were doing, in the feel of the thing. And then also too, like you guys are saying, like there's so much of that kind of calling out, you know, kind of like, let's not celebrate this stupid fucking decade, because there's a lot of not good about it. And so like, some of it's played for jest, and some of it plays really kind of uncomfortable. And I like that they do both those things. Like the lady at the front desk, when she's like, you know, asking about where the mom is located and wherever else, it's like, well, I know there's going to be protocols and safety, but this is this. And she's like, oh yeah, she's in room 218 or whatever else. Like,
yeah,
until 10 a.m. Like, fuck, he just hands her a piece of paper, like, whatever. And it's sort of like, all right. And then like when she first arrives, that lady like offering her a ride or whatever else, and our girl's like, you would never get into a car with a stranger, this, that, whatever else. And the lady's just kind of looking at her like, as if like a badger crawled out of her nose. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
do you want a ride or what?
Well, you just give a ride to it. You just give a ride to a kid who needs a ride. Like, I don't understand. And like, so that's a played for silly, but then other parts are played kind of uncomfortable where there's the joke, but it's like, you know, like the thing of like the, like, if she'd only been okay with blowjobs, then maybe she'd still be alive. And like, please let that not be the message takeaway. And so like, that's funny. But then you also go like, oh, like it's just, like, oh, does she put out? It feels like that Revenge of the Nerds. Like, oh, does she put out? Does she put out? Kind of, you know, or Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where like it starts to become a little bit like a tragedy and less like a comedy. Mm-hmm. And they kind of play with those edges a little bit too, which I thought was really kind of a clever thing. Also, you know, like to indict a little bit of present day culture to some degree, like where you have a little bit of like, you know, the guy doing the murder podcast things, and like, you know, kind of this like lifelong obsession. But then also Julie Bowen's character, like, you know, she's got the decorative like Martha Stewart shelves in the hallway that open up and just fucking shotgun in there. Sort of like a home invasion, you know, like protecting yourself and not being a victim. Like there's an extremeness to that. Where, like, how far does that go? And so I don't know. They really seem to like be perfectly willing to kind of like dance around those edges, you know. And I was like, good on you. And also I love that the mechanics of getting her to 1987. They don't make any sense, like, at all. you know, like it's just like the friend makes the time machine, can't get it to work, and it's like, oh, you stick a conduit in there, that's what makes it go. Like, okay.
Yeah. See, I love a movie that will do that and just go, yeah, this character has a time machine. You get on board or fuck off.
Yeah,
we're not gonna
the little brother building the rocket or whatever in Better Off Dead. Just like, yeah, it's just happening in the background.
We're not gonna try and explain to you how this teenager would be developing a time machine. Here's your lampshade and your hand wave and take it or leave it, man. Let's go. Like, I appreciate that.
Well, it feels like was it the Explorers with River Phoenix, where, you know, they make a spaceship and it's like, okay, and like, all right, cool. They made a spaceship. They're in space. Like, cool. All right, we're going with it.
One kid invented a force field.
And it's like you kind of roll with it. That being said, like the other thing that I really liked, and this took me a little bit of reflecting, and on a kind of like slightly more serious kind of tone with this, where like she goes back in time, she doesn't stop all the murders. Is the thing, and it's like, and I like that one of the takeaways was that like even when given the situation, like, would you go back and, you know, that question that people always ask of like, if you could go back and do it any differently, would you, or whatever, that kind of stuff. And like, she goes back and she can't stop all the bad stuff from occurring. And it's like, that's a great kind of idea. Like this, like, not everything's going to go the way that would be ideal, you know? Mm-hmm. And I really dig that a lot. I think that's just a really cool little thing, because it probably would have been easier to make it so that they could have saved all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they all would have, you know, survived or whatever else. But that's no matter how which way you slice it, that's the life ain't gonna work that way. You know, it's like, yes. Thank you. So I thought that was really cool too. I really dug that. Also, like the sequences with the killer guy, like, you know, like pretty top level slasher kind of bits where still he's not like you know, Jason in 5 or 6 or whatever, but it's like, you know, he's still like hard charging, but can be knocked over, can get things knocked, you know, get kicked in the face, and we're like, oh. And so there's some thrilling kind of components to that too, which is like, it's awesome. So it's, I don't know, they really kind of pulled in the right kind of stuff. And like Josh says often with these kind of things where you're going to make a thing that harkens back to a thing, but you're not going to keep making the mistakes of that thing.
Yeah. Like, just grounding it with Julia, or Shipka, whatever her name is, was the smart choice, because she is always our surrogate. Like, she can look at these things and be appalled and make us look at them in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really liked her a lot. I really liked her as the kind of the center of the thing. I thought she was great. I also really loved the kind of and I think if you're being nitpicky, you could kind of nitpick it a little bit, but I love the kind of fast friends component to where, like, you know, how like dumb teenagers generally are, where it's sort of like, you know, like it's like, oh, well, she's a psychic. It's like, oh, yeah. Okay. And they're like, and now she's just sort of in, and it's sort of like, okay, well, what?
And I love though that's easier to sell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, I'm a try. That's a clever move. I also really enjoyed the scene where she asks the cops if they've seen Back to the Future, and they say no, because the movie's been out for 2 years, and if you missed it in the theater,
you just didn't get to.
You don't get to see it until it's back in the theater, or maybe you catch it on television, right?
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, so they, but then having the other girl be the secret sci-fi nerd kind of made it all work. Like, this is very deft in the way that it put everything together, and it doesn't waste a lot of time trying to justify stuff. It's like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things are going to get weird, and she's going to mess up the timeline. And then that's kind of a cool thing. Like, she knows everything that's going to happen, and then suddenly she doesn't. And I love that moment when they go, well, aren't you psychic? And she goes, not anymore.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's good stuff.
Well, and that was another thing that I really dug too, was like how they played around with that thing of like, you know, when things change, then all of a sudden people in present time are being like, wait, did I remember that? Like, oh, I know I did see her there, this other thing happened with this, or, you know, like it starts to monkey with it in like kind of a real time sort of way. I mean, if you were to sit down and try to map it out, I mean, I'm sure there's probably mistakes there. Who gives a shit?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Oddly enough, episode 1 of season 2 of Loki uses the same mechanic.
Hmm.
Yeah. So maybe there's something in the air in the writer's room a year and a half ago. But.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, just sort of a, it was just a fun kind of a romp of a thing. Doesn't have like a big axe to grind message wise, but is creative and inventive enough. It's fun enough. The characters are likable a lot of ways. I really do love that they, you know, again, not making those mistakes of the past thing where as shit starts to get really real, you know, they just kind of, there's a banding together sort of thing about like the, you know, like the dad character, the teenage version of him, like, you know, he's a dope, but he's like, I don't want my friends to get hurt. And yeah. So like, this is actually scary, like legitimately scary. We're kind of on our own here. And like, there's no big speeches. There's no big Bill Pullman and Independence Day kind of things, but it's just kind of like a, I don't know. There's something about like, just not having to like, have some big goddamn speech yeah. about how to like do these things. They just kind of do it.
They pull off that weird magic trick with the, her, you know, young mom and her friends going from being kind of Friday the 13th kids to Nightmare on Elm Street kids by the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you just go, oh, we just care about them because they're just being human. And that's enough. You don't have to have, like you said, the big rousing speech. It's yeah. simply like, oh, there's a legitimate threat. And at the end of the day, then we are all bonded in being scared and wanting to live. And that's enough. It doesn't need yeah. to be a higher purpose to that.
Yeah, and I really admire that. I think it's like, you know, because it just feels like this is definitely one of those movies that 10,000% you could have made like different choices and it could have still been a movie. But instead, they just kind of seem to really dial into the idea of like what's more enjoyable or satisfying. Much like in Spontaneous, where it's sort of like there's certain choices that are made where you go like, it's like, ah, that's a slightly tougher choice, but like, cool. Well done. Like, excellent. Makes me really happy.
You could have ended up with this being very sour.
Yes, exactly.
And end up really reading like the kids these days are snowflakes who couldn't survive my awesome childhood. But instead, they choose to empathize with the Gen Z instead. And that's really refreshing. But then they also like everyone too.
Yeah.
Like, they strip away the veneer of that 80s meanness, you know, like that all of the mean girls have because they are deeply, deeply insecure. And then they show you that part of mom and like she understands her mom better. And like, I like it when a movie likes its people.
Yeah.
And makes you care about them, even if like you care about them and you like them and then they killed them off, like at least they made you feel something.
Yeah.
Well, the mom for sure, but then no better example than Sheriff's daughter, where like mm-hmm. Sheriff's daughter is like this kind of like, you know, and we, you know, I'm sure Matt, you probably did too, but Josh, I mean, I'm sure you could probably think of a few people that we went to school with that had that kind of like a, you know, like I never did anything wrong, and then they were like the most wrongdoing people, and but like, you know, the second an adult or authority figures there, there's the biggest kiss ass in the world. And right. you're just sort of like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And it's like, it's because you just don't like yourself and you're very insecure. And like, I really like how they didn't, she wasn't, that character wasn't like the butt of the joke. It was like, it shows like why she turned into the person she is in 2023. And like, you go back to 1987, you're like, aha. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to make fun of her, or like she's gonna be a butt of the joke as so much as being like, see, this is kind of what this is for somebody who behaves and is acting like this. This is what this is. And it's like, ah, okay, cool. And so like, even a character like that, they put enough care into to be like, I can, all right, yep, there we go. Like, mm-hmm. I, you know, so it seems to just have a lot of ambition in terms of thought. And like, yeah. that's really cool. The only like, okay, this is going to seem sort of silly, but what the fucking mask though? Like, it's like, did I miss something? I mean, I watched this through twice. Did I miss something about the mask? Like, the mask is so doofy.
Yeah. Okay, I thought it looked a little bit like Butthead and a little bit like, or Beavis, whichever one, and a little bit like Johnny Bravo. Like, where did that come? Yeah, it was okay. Like, it looked a little goofy, but then like a lot of those did, you know.
I sort of like the idea of not overthinking the mask.
Mm. Just, well, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what sure. I mean?
Like, because it's, we've had like these iconic masks And you occasionally still get a new one. Like, you know, Ghostface came out of nowhere and was suddenly huge. But there are certainly like lesser horror movies we've watched where you can tell they're going like, this is our, like, this will be a Halloween costume. And you're like, nah, it looks too try hard. Mm-hmm. And this, I kind of like it. Like the, was it Happy Death Day that had the babies? And so you have this stupid fuck, like, it doesn't matter. It's actually kind of cool when it sort of sucks because the juxtaposition of what's happening is then like a little funny and also a little scarier.
Yeah.
So I just sort of like it. It's like, ah, fuck it. It's a thing on the shelf. Who cares? Because honestly, if I was going to put on a mask to rob someone's house or murder them or something like that, I don't think I'd be worried about the aesthetics. I would just be worried about concealment, you know?
Well, yeah, but it's like, I guess part of it is like, I think part of it is just it looks so distinct that it doesn't look like a monster, it doesn't look like a vampire, it doesn't look like a whatever. So it's sort of like who is that supposed to be? And like, what is the, like, what the fuck is this thing? And
maybe
it's like,
that's what they're hoping, you get paralyzed by that question and just stand there while they
gotcha. And also too, like, I mean, not for nothing, but you know, and I fully appreciate this, and I'm not saying this in a snide way at all, but I really appreciate that this movie did not have like $100 million budget. So like, in terms of like the theme park, I mean, Matt, you probably noticed this probably better than anybody, but it was like, you noticed that like the Midway games and the rides were definitely ones that could be positioned at like a, some kind of a fairground area that they could shoot the movie in, where like they could make it look like an amusement park, but it's like, it's not really an amusement park. Like, you know, the Cybertron and then like the Ferris wheel and then like one other thing. And it's like, those are all, that's all shit that you could like hire out and like position for and set decorate. Yeah. And it's like, so it wasn't like, you know, big ass, you know, roller coasters and whatever. I was like, ah, this is like traveling carnival kind of things that they,
yeah, because when they said it's all the fairgrounds, I was like, what the fuck kind of,
yeah. And it was like, and, but I mean, but I appreciate that
it was a shitty local fair though. Like, it actually reminded me of the Prescott.
That's true. There are, I keep forgetting that there's like, I'm used to going to like the state fair in Minnesota, which is absurdly huge, but there's also like the Carver County Fair. You know,
yeah, because you see the Gravitron, you know, or the Cybertron or whatever, and you know that somewhere over there is a hammerhead.
Oh yeah,
and a zipper. And
oh, the zipper! God, Jesus Christ, that thing!
The House of Horrors, where you can like hide and scare your friends.
Yeah,
and you know, like I've been to, I could smell those rides. Like, I had to explain to Oliver like what the Gravitron was, and how it, you know, back in my day we did this thing.
Well, the zipper, I always think of the zipper too, because I think of, it's so funny, like when you're younger, you have a little bit more of that invisibility thing. And I used to be able to do a lot more of this. I mean, anymore, I have to, any ride, if I go on any rides, like we're going, I don't think I told you this, we're going to Disneyland in January, because we want Conlon and Joe to go, we'll go together. And we just kind of, you know, we want to get out of the house and kind of give them a neat experience. And we just think it'd be really fun. And you know, it's been a positive thing. And so like, but like, I learned a long time ago, once I got to a certain point, I am very much a Disneyland ride person and not a Six Flags ride person. Gotcha. And so it's sort of like, I just can't do the whippy around you going, whatever. But at a certain point in my life, I was able to do like the zippers and all this spinning around your shit all the time. No problem. Now I can't even, you know, the Tower of Terror, I had to get wheeled off by medics. I'm not kidding.
I went to the camp, well, that's not Camp Snoop anymore, whatever the theme park is in the Mall of America,
right,
you know, 5 years ago or something like that with the boy. Like, my birth mom got us like a couple unlimited ride passes, and that was the first time where I'd realized, oh no, I am an old,
yeah,
because like, he wanted to go on fucking everything because we could, and I'm not gonna say no. And boy, was I really trying not to hurl on like four or five fans. And, you know, of course, there's the one that just kind of goes around in a circle, but you're in like a ball. And he has a joystick to turn it up. You know, you can rotate forward or backwards. So he just turned us upside down for the duration. And I'm just like, do you want to spin it or change it? Because, no, this is awesome. I'm like, sure is, bud.
This can't be
that long. You know, these things are only like 45 seconds long, so they can crank more people through. But I was like, good God, kill me.
And it's funny too, because Kristen did that when we went to, when we were in Florida, we did Disney World and then Universal with Conlon, where like he wanted to go on the Twin Dragons, which has some upside down Z parts, and I can't do it. And so Kristen was like, and so you know, we had that like the special pass for the one day or whatever else, and so they could just go to the line or whatever. So Conlon wanted to do it. Like, they did it quite a few times, and Crystal was like, "Oh yeah, let's go do it, whatever else." And then I found out later, she's like, "Oh yeah, no, I was barely hanging on for the thing," but he was really excited, and we know you couldn't do it, so like whatever. Yeah. So she was barely hanging on for dear life. But I was thinking, like, with the zipper, it was like, it's so funny thinking back on that, because like, you used to be able to do this shit like that. But what my one memory of that damn thing, Joshua, from the Yavapai County Fair, was being on that thing, and it has all the creaks and groans. But then hearing, and I could hear it in my head to this day, hearing a groan that's a different groan, where it was like the metal turned and the metal kind of made a different sound. And I remember that sound to this day, going like, man, I wonder if Joe Bob Bajing Jang didn't accidentally put the one bolt on correctly, and all, we're just gonna end up 50 yards over that way. And so like, and at the time you don't look at that and you go like, oh, we're gonna go on rides. It's like, you don't go like, I wonder about the structural integrity and safety standards of this fucking carnival ride. And this is sort of like, now I look back on that like, Jesus H Christ.
Yeah, like how did any of us survive the Yavapai County Fair?
Yeah, I don't know how the fuck any of us got out of there, because it was just like, it should have been Final Destination, for Christ's sakes. But it's just sort of like, it's just funny to think about that now. But so no, I mean, I guess part of it was just sort of like, seeing those rides, seeing the way that it was like, that's just so much effort into to make this thing look like a thing. And it's like, that's really cool. So I just appreciated it more than anything else. I was like, that's really cool. Good on you guys.
Yeah. So overall, like, I don't think this slaps as hard as like Happy Death Day, but it does have the same like generosity towards its characters and like genuine empathy. And like, it starts out a little bit rough because I think that it just feels like trying a little too hard to approximate what the youth these days are like.
Yeah.
And you get a little bit of that, like, trigger warning, my pronouns are now. But fortunately, they really quickly switch to making fun of Gen X folks. So,
yeah.
And they are way better at that because they already know all of those tropes so deeply,
Yeah.
So, yeah, this gets good. It stays good. To me, it was like an 8 out of 10. I had a great time with it.
Yeah, this one, I'd say I'm right there with you at the 8 out of 10. As I mentioned briefly, like, really refreshing to watch a thing that's going to bring up a bunch of tropes of an era that you remember and actually, like, agree and appreciate the references and not feel like they're just throwing nostalgia porn at you. Mm. So that was cool. And, just a fun little story. Like, I had a great time with it. This is just fun to watch. This would be a great, now that we're hitting Halloween coming up here pretty quick and people are going to be having watch parties and whatnot, maybe more frequently than they would, this would be a good crowd pleaser, I think, with a group of people, because you'd get to laugh as well as have your myrtle-ation.
Definitely. And I think I'll be high man on the totem pole here. I'm going to just go just a touch higher. I'll say 8.5. I really had a lot of fun with this. I really appreciated how well it was assembled and made and like well shot, and a lot of creative ideas, a lot of good things to say without being preachy, without being too cutesy, even though some of the little bits are absolutely cutesy, the kind of fish out of water things. But, I'm not going to lie, when she comes back in her home and she's like, just shakily, she's her mom and runs and embraces her mom and the whole thing. Like, I was a little bit soft-eyed about that. I was just like, yeah, man, like there's a level of appreciation that the movie seems to care about and the character seems to care about too. And like, fuck yes. Like, that's a really great thing to come across, and just keep making more movies that like give a little more care to your characters, especially if they're young people. Sort of like, in the more care and regard and more thoughtfulness that can be in there, and just the more staying power these things kind of have. And it was just right up there with, like I said, with Final Girls and Spontaneous and just bringing some good heart and life into some things, and just a lot of fun in the middle of it. So yeah, hats off to these guys. 8.5 out of 10 fucking time travel movies.
Me. Also, Randall Park just hanging out, holding it down.
Yeah, he's one of those dudes too that like is just on the border of like almost everything that he says is just makes me chuckle. Even if he's just saying normal stuff, like just the way that he speaks just makes me laugh. It's just sort of like, it's like, ah, you're just one of those people that just like, just speaks and it's funny.
Yeah.
I love the bit. I do love that. I do really love the thing where she's got like, she's topped up the blood and she like hands him the little baggie. Like, oh, I've got DNA. And they're just like, he's like, what is that? And he's like, what?
We'll just run it through the world criminal data.
Criminal computer. Ooh. it's like, oh, fuck. Yeah, that's true. Like,
well, and just the lack of internet. So when she's like, I'm from, what is it, St. William's Sound or something in Canada? And they're like, sounds made up, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, there was no way to fact check that without driving to a building.
like you have to find like some kind of directory of like islands off of British Columbia.
Like an atlas, yeah.
But I love that. That's another thing too. I don't know where this was shot, but I don't really 100% know where they shot this thing. But it was like, I love that they made a couple of cracks about. A couple of cracks about Canadians, but I mean, almost the whole cast is very clearly Canadian. Yeah. Not the drink, like really humans, Canadian. Like yeah.
I was trying to get there, but I couldn't.
It's like, well, like the one guy's like, it's like, oh yeah, she's Canadian, and it's like the way he does his vows, like, oh my friend, yes, you are too. But you know, whatever. Yeah, that's totally
fine. They're Canadians, eh? Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, okay, buddy. But yeah, so yeah, good on everybody involved, and definitely, I don't know a damn thing about the director, the lady who directed this, but I would be very curious to see what else she's gonna come up with, because you know, she's got some TV credits and stuff like that, so like you know, obviously can handle a feature, so like yeah, let's see what else she can come up with too, which is really cool.
For sure.
Yes, indeed. And with that, we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with some things to watch for next time.
Yeah, sir, you betcha.
So next time out, we're going to check out some new stuff that's on some of our streaming services. So we're going to watch Pet Sematary Bloodlines on Paramount. Who knows? It might end up being as good as Hellraiser
Bloodlines. I feel obligated.
Yeah. Then we're going to watch Boogeyman on Hulu, and Slaughterhouse on Hulu, because apparently we're trying to put my marriage in jeopardy.
Just tell Jess that it was Matt's fault.
Yeah, that's fine. I will take one for the team. If either you ever need to blame like a shitty decision on a dipshit friend, I will be that friend.
Oh, by the way, Matthew, by the way, I received the package that you sent, and that is so great.
Oh, yeah.
It made me so happy. But now, so Chris and I discussed it, and we've set up rules in terms of sending something back, which is like the internet's got tons of things, of course, and that would be easy. That we have set up the rule that it has to be discovered in the wild, that we have to be somewhere and see a thing and be like, oh, dear, and then be like, okay, does that pass the level of dir that's required? But so it can't be from the internet. It has to be in, and it has to cause both of us or comments with us, at least two of the three adults to go, ugh. You know, and then we go like, okay, that's in contention. So like, those are the rules we've set up for our household now. Because the internet would be too fucking easy, right? They're like, eh, whatever. That's, you know, whatever. But it really tickled me to know. And also your note really made me happy, like in a very, very, very sincere way. And I thought that was lovely. So like that was really terrific.
Cool.
And I agree. And I've been Josh this entire time. And I said,
before I forget, we will have a short next week as well. This one I just watched today as I was going through my to-do list, and it's called Milk Teeth. And boy, did I have trouble getting through this.
Yeah, I have a short.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know this one. This one was at Fantastic Fest, like I saw it here, either South by or Fantastic Fest, like 4 or 5 years ago, 6 years ago, somewhere in that range. I don't remember exactly, but oh yeah, I know this one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
So enjoy that. And as far as you know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Dunn and Austin. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. And even though Halloween's on a Tuesday this year, because I've got a little one, she's going to be a ghost ballerina, by the way.
Nice.
That was her. That was what she decided. She's going to be a ballerina, but she's going to be a ghost. She's a ghost ballerina. Makes perfect sense. Okay. You know, as we all get older, we get kids around us, you get kids in your neighborhood, whatever else kind of stuff. Like, it's really, really important to remember that, like, dumb, silly shit is still fun, silly shit for some people. And, like, don't be too cool for stuff. Josh has this down packed. They do their, they do so much great, really creative, wonderful stuff with costumes. And they didn't understand what the fuck is up. But I think in general, if I'm going to say any kind of advicey thing, it's just sort of like, admire things for being silly and frivolous, because that's where a lot of special shit lies. So as we go into holiday season, and the Halloween season especially, it's a lot of it's so dopey and dorky and ridiculous and overwrought and expensive and silly and time-consuming. But fucking A, right. What the hell else are you going to do? So, you know, embrace how cool and silly this kind of shit is. Be like Josh. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it.